Welcome to the BioBalance Health Podcast. I'm Dr. Kathy Maupin, and Brett Newcomb is here today again to talk to us about gender differences and how we look at sex and love.
That's such a loaded topic, you know, gender differences. One of the questions that sometimes comes up in therapy with families is somebody will say, well, who made them God? Or who decided that they were the ones that got to say what was right or what was mm-hmm. wrong? And how that ties into this conversation is when you start talking about sex role identification and gender mm-hmm. identification. What are the differences between men and women in the way that they experience the sex drive and in the way that they find outlets for that experiencing of the sex drive? And then compounding that or enhancing that, flavoring it, is what about the culture in which we live? Are those options available or viable in our culture? I mean, if you've been following the news, the tragedy of this poor kid at Rutgers mm-hmm. who was videotaped by his roommate and then committed suicide, you know, the shame factor, the embarrassment factor, the unacceptability factor for him drove him over the edge. Some of those things are culturally driven. Some are defined by religious values. Some are defined by familial values. And some are defined by biological imperatives. So how do we walk among those lines to have a healthy sex life in any culture? And mm-hmm. so today, what I would like to do is explore with you from where you sit and the kind of patients that you have and the conversations you have with your patients, what can you help us know about the way that men or women take that biological sex drive and interpret it into their lives?
You know, it's still very complex, even if we're just looking at, you know, the way women look at sex drive. And it's not just sex drive. It's sexual desire has to do with fantasies and thinking about sex and planning on having sex. And whether that, the question is that really in our society something that's acceptable for women to do?
And so do women plan to have sex? Do they say like, oh, Tuesday afternoon about 2 would be a good time?
Yeah,
and
they
until
do,
then,
actually.
I'm not available.
I mean, I think they do. Talking to women all day, I would say that's
when
a
can
yes.
I fit that in with all the other things I have to do?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what they expect out of their relationship, what they've always done, or
so. Can they control the drive? Can you dial it down so that it doesn't intrude, it doesn't disturb your day, it doesn't affect your mood because it's not convenient until Tuesday, and that's the room you put it in? Because men aren't like that. Men are like, hello.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, that's true. I think we can probably dial it back.
Wow.
More. Partially that has to do with how we were made. We were made to watch the kids and make more children by having sex, and then we're doing 2 or 3 things at once.
So
we have to
put
it away.
Cultural responsibilities again, those defined roles. Again.
Right. And those are some things that just that aren't different across cultures. Women have to kind of be the recipient of the sex drive. In reality, they have a sex drive.
Yeah.
They think about it. They can fantasize about it while they're taking care of the kids.
I talk with women who have a strong sex drive, mm-hmm. and when they attempt to assert themselves in a relationship, in a marriage, or outside of a marriage, they find that men are very frequently put off or intimidated by what's perceived as a sexually aggressive female.
That's true, but that's because they haven't learned how to do it so the man thinks it's his idea.
Okay.
And so that's really the true art of
so
it.
So where do girls learn that? Do their moms teach them?
No. Your moms don't teach you.
Your moms don't teach you that stuff.
And, you know, girls learn it. They inherently, if they have a good social sense, they understand, they have to understand that men still run the world. No matter, I mean, I'm a physician. I do a man's job. I've always done a man's job, but I've never been one moment in my life where I didn't think that I had to be at least as good or better than the rest of the guys around
me. Yeah,
So it's still a guy's world, and you still have to allow them to have their ego so that you can.
So the dance of that goes back to our last podcast conversation about flirting behaviors and cueing behaviors, because you have to do that within a context. So that's managing the external manifestation of the sex drive.
Right.
Internally, what are women aware of? What are women like?
From all the conversations that I've had, I think there's just as many different types of women as there are types of men. But
okay.
I mean, if you're talking about just the central common areas, I think that women look to sex to have a bond and intimacy more than they look to sex to have a sexual release.
Okay.
However, that's still there, and they would rather please their partner than please themselves in general. Although this next generation coming up is a little more aware of pleasing themselves and more comfortable.
Is that because gender roles are changing in our culture?
Yeah, they're changing.
And it's becoming more acceptable for women to own that or express that than it has been historically?
I mean, all you have to do is read Glamour magazine and read the... I mean, I usually tend to read all of the magazines I can get to see what everybody's talking about, what they're thinking about. And I mean, How to Get the Big O is one of the like big spreads in Glamour magazine, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
And then they talk about the different
kinds. That a mainstream
kinds.
Publication could yeah. now talk about
and,
that.
And one that's directed toward late teenagers and early 20s.
See, if I saw that as a title in a magazine article, I would think they're trying to go on the Oprah show.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I read this and I'm sure that people who are my age, who are in their 50s and older, have no clue. But these girls will know.
I have women
how to achieve different kinds of orgasms.
They've never had an orgasm. They may have been sexually active all their life, and they fake it. It's kind of like the Meg Ryan.
Oh, yeah. I love that scene.
Where she? I'll have what she's having. You know?
I love that scene. That's
so in your experience, in your conversations with women, is that fairly common? Is that rare? Is that
we fake orgasms because we can. You can't.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Oh, well, enough said. Yeah.
You know, I mean, we would only do that if the session goes too long, if we lose interest, if it doesn't feel right, if we, you know, or if we're just our mind somewhere else. And yeah. So
your body chemistry just shifts and suddenly you're finished.
Yeah.
But may not be.
But you're not really finished.
So if the orgasm isn't the primary experiential focus for the woman, what is? What
the relationship
constitutes?
Is.
How would a woman say, I have a great sex life, if she's not talking about how many orgasms she can have?
That would be how a man would describe it. But I mean, but women tend to talk about how much they love their husband or how generous he is to make sure that she is pleased, or, you know, she views it
so things
as
like
a
foreplay
thing.
Or post-coital bliss, you know, that, you know,
is really important to women.
Wham, bam, thank you, man, rumble over and go to sleep.
That's
isn't
not
a
really
female good
thing,
message
generally.
For her.
No, it's a really bad message for her.
Yeah.
Because then what she was participating in was an act, but not a relationship.
Okay.
And so that's in general, I'm saying in general, there are, you know, there are outliers.
So what do men need to know? How do men discover in their committed relationship what meets those needs for women? How do I recognize that if I want to make sure that's happening for you?
Well, men generally don't. I mean, I can't speak for all men, but I mean, my feedback from patients is that they're really unhappy if all their husbands want to do is 5 minutes of sex. See ya.
Yeah.
They don't pay attention to them. They don't look at them. They could be anybody. They feel without a like they're not important. They're just a body.
Okay. And so if it's just a mechanical or functional release,
right,
then they feel diminished by that.
Yeah, that's in general. That's in women in relationships. I'm not sure how that works outside of relationships. Mm-hmm. I think there are some women who have sex for the sake of having sex just like men do.
Yeah.
But I think most women in relationships are there to have the relationship. And often men view sex as a release and women view sex as a bonding.
Okay.
That's pretty much hardwired into most women.
Yeah.
And when men, their husbands or their partners are not responding to their flirting or their come-ons, or they feel like they're not there. They feel like they've just disappeared.
So, but part of what you're telling me is that your efforts to get your partner's attention may include sexual performance, sexual signaling of some kind.
Right.
But that the payoff for you is more than just a sexual payoff. It's a larger piece of the pie. It's a relationship enhancing experience.
It is. It is. It's about connecting. It's not about
sex. So it's about nurturing. Yeah. It's about
both nurturing and
being nurtured.
Being nurtured.
Yeah, it's reciprocal. It's got to be reciprocal.
So if a man doesn't attend to the beginning and the end of this, then women feel like they were used, I guess is the best term.
Yeah. But you know what? I don't know how clearly men are taught what constitutes nurturing behaviors. I think there's some John Wayne imagery out there about if I stand in the doorway and protect the home and bring home the bacon and, you know, acquire the status symbols or the markers that matter in our culture, then I am nurturing my family's existence and survival and success. But I don't know that that teaches me how to nurture my 5-year-old when he skins his knee, or how to nurture my wife when her mother dies. What can I learn? What can you tell me that will help me better be able to nurture a woman in my life who matters to me?
You watch her. You see what she does. And you mirror her. Because what she's doing is nurturing someone else. Usually we do the things, I mean, just in general, human beings do the things that they want.
I appreciate the answer that you're giving me, and I think I have some sense of what it means. But for the listeners, when you say you watch her, can you be more specific? Do I look at her eyes? Do I look at her tone of voice? Do I look at her level of body tension? I mean, what are the things that I can look at that tell me if I'm, I mean, God forbid I should just ask her.
God forbid, because no one
wants
to
talk
about this.
Does this work for you? Do you like this?
Yeah. No, I mean, we're talking first about how to be nurturing, right?
Yes, yes.
So the best thing is to look at how she nurtures others, how she holds the kids, how she hugs you, how she, you know, approaches you.
Okay.
That's most probably not a come on, but a nurturing kind of a love. But when you're talking sexuality, to figure out what is good for her, you have to listen to her. You have to see what gets her eye contact or what she draws away from. That's a definite, you know, she's not getting it and she doesn't like that. And so it's a dance. You have to follow her lead as she's trying to follow yours.
So then can I extrapolate? And I don't know that I can. I mean, it's an honest question, not a manipulative one. Can I extrapolate then that women watch men in those ways for opportunities to nurture, for opportunities to invite for intimacy, to make sure that the guy is okay? If I come home from work every day after a hard day at the salt mines, and 20 days out of 30, my wife is in sweats, she hasn't done her hair, she hasn't put on makeup, dinner may be started. She may be running out the door to take one kid to soccer and another kid to the dentist and a piano lesson before she comes home. Hello, goodbye. You know, and there's something in the microwave for you. How do I notice that she's noticing me? Is there like a high five, like a catch you later?
No, but that's kind of a dysfunctional kind of reaction. There's something that she's burying and all that. She's burying it in too much activity.
So if I'm watching her and I see that,
then there's something she's not getting.
Then it tells me there's something missing.
Right. And it could have been, you know, childhood abuse. I have a lot of patients that have had that. And they hide it by gaining tons of weight, not taking care of themselves. And they cushion themselves against another approach by a male. Now, they don't tend to do that with their husbands, but that could be. It could roll over to their husbands too.
Or they do, and they've signaled in such a way they're on the channel that allows the husband to pick a wife who's not going to be sexually available.
True.
Just like a wife picks a husband who won't make those sexual demands.
Right. That's true. And we do pick people who fit our own dysfunction since everyone has that. But what you described is not somebody in general, not as... I mean, I'm used to patients who are motivated to be better, to get better, to be better, to be better in their marriages and to please their husbands.
Yes.
And in general, these are the patients that I'm discussing. People who are motivated to have a a relationship, they often come in and say, my husband saw you on television and he wants me to come.
Yes.
Now tell me why I should be here.
Okay.
You know, by then I've already had their lab. I already have their history.
Because he's found a way then to say to her, there is something that is not working in my relationship with you. There's a piece that is not there for me, and I'm concerned about it. I'm disturbed about it. Will you help me find the answer? Will you go in and see this doctor and see if that will solve our problem?
Which is a warning sign. They're giving her a warning sign that if you don't fix this, something else is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to go out, or I'm going to, that's what women think.
I'm thinking about a couple that I used to do therapy with, and the man was in his 80s and the woman was in her 70s. And he still felt that he wanted some levels of sexual interaction, but physiologically, his body was really on the downhill slide.
I could fix that.
They should have found you. Yeah. I mean, they're both dead now, but they fought tooth and nail because she would say to him, you're old, your body doesn't work, get over it, leave me alone. And he would say to her, but I still want to cuddle, or I still want to touch, or I still want some semblance that acknowledges that sex is still a part of who I am, my definition of myself as a man, and so on. And she was very berating, emasculating, eviscerating, and they would have these horrible, horrible fights because she was not prepared. And
they didn't have makeup sex, I guess.
No, because her definition of any kind of acceptable sex, and her explanation was it had to do with her religious upbringing and her childhood. And I remember she was in her 70s, and this was several years ago.
So yeah.
When her childhood began, these messages were more aggressive. But her explanation was the only acceptable sexual experience is full-blown intercourse. And if we're not able to accomplish that, then it's all a waste of time, and it's unacceptable, it's distasteful. And his frame of reference was so much touching, cuddling, stroking, talking, fantasizing, remembering, is in some way, quote, sexual, and is in a very large way satisfying to me or stimulating to me or nurturing to me. And she would just have none of it.
He could relive their old life.
Yeah.
And that's a nice coping mechanism, but he needed somebody to help him, and she was unwilling to do that.
Yeah.
Partially because of her upbringing.
Yes.
But that's kind of unusual. Men usually pull away if they're not able to function.
Yeah.
They don't usually go for the nurturing part. Women can go for the nurturing part because that's we're taught to nurture.
Which is what's so fascinating. When we're talking about gender disparity here, what you seem to be focusing on as the primary sexual awareness for women is about emotional nurturing more than mechanical release.
Right.
And the implication seems to be that for many men, if not most men, the primary experience is a mechanical release. And if there's that positive emotional experience, it's a secondary gain, but it's not necessarily the goal.
Right. That goes back to women are trying to foster a relationship for children. That's hardwired into us, and men are trying to spread their seed.
Okay. Well, now
that is something that's hardwired. I mean, that's just something that's just not going to.
And that's a beautiful lead in to the next conversation that I want to have with you. There's a man named Edward Wilson. He's a Harvard biologist who's written a book called Sociobiology, and in that book he talks about genetically imperative breeding strategies that are gender different, and that the cultural manifestations of femininity and masculinity and the messages about male sex and female sex and so on all tie together with this conversation we're having today. So maybe the next time we meet, we can talk a little bit about the anthropology of sex, both from a cultural anthropology and from a physical anthropology standpoint.
That would be excellent, but I don't want to leave this because I think that what we haven't said is that the way we bring our children up does a lot to tell them who they should be and how they should act with sexuality. And sexuality has been for girls, we're taught, and we still teach our girls, don't have anything to do with sex. You have to stay away from it.
Right.
And because, in the back of every parent's mind is thinking, I don't want to be a grandmother. and I don't want you to ruin your life. But in the outcome of that is, oh, don't have sex until you get married. And then once you get married, you can have sex all you want. Well, years of repression.
And we give mixed messages. Women, we tell our daughters, don't be a slut. And we tell our men, it's okay to be a stud.
Right. I mean, that's
the paradox of that is interesting.
Yeah. Cause you know,
so maybe we should have a conversation about teaching children about sex.
Well, that's most probably true. Yeah. I mean, you can go, there are extremists on both sides,
right.
But, viewing sex as part of a gift and somebody's sexuality is not being definitely related to their partner, but to themselves. Most women of my age believe it kind of has something to do with their partner in general, if mm-hmm. they have one. Mm-hmm. They usually learn it's not something to do with their partner when they're single again, or when they don't have their spouse dies. They then learn that their sexuality is theirs.
Wow.
But it's hard to get past the repression from society, and usually both men and women are looking for really sexually satisfying relationships, but they're also looking for other things.
Well, and some cultures, I think, are more generally sexually repressed. I know my mm-hmm. European friends tell me that Americans are sexually repressed and sexually obsessed.
True.
In like you go to Europe and you see commercials that have nudity, and in the United States they'd be burned down the TV stations.
That seems to be true to me too. That's what I've noticed as well. But and so society does that, and so then they have to live with the outcome.
Yeah.
So then we have women who are frigid, or women who don't respond to their husbands because they've shut it down. But most of the people that we're talking about are people who, in my world, have relationships. They've been sexually mm-hmm. responsive in the past. Now, how do we deal with getting it back? Do they go back to their old repression feelings, or have they learned something?
Okay, so we'll continue this conversation next time with talking about the issue of repression and the sexual messages that women receive and that men receive in our culture, and then we'll look at other cultures as well.
That sounds great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email us at podcast@biobalancehealth.com. Or for more information, visit biobalancehealth.com on the web. You can call us at 314-993-0963. Thanks for listening.